I'm Chinee Ogwumike.
I'm Lisa Leslie, and we're very excited to tell you about our new podcast with Blue Wire, Front and Center.
Lisa and I are breaking down what's going on in our lives, in the world, and keeping it 100.
We're also learning from amazing guests as well, like Emmanuel Acho.
People that show love to me, I forever got their back.
Vivica A. Fox.
If the foundation isn't right, then the rest of it's going to go wrong from there.
And more.
Subscribe to Front and Center today.
Blue Wire.
All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports, the sports movie podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcast, and this week presented by BetOnline.ag and Indeed. I am your host, Kyle Bandujo. Joining me today, returning to Big Screen Sports, he is joined to talk Major League, Major League 2, and Swingers. He is the host of USA Baseball's Covering the Bases podcast, and as a new project he is about to tell you about right now, it is my buddy Darren Vaught. Darren, thanks so much for returning to Big Screen Sports.
Yeah, always a pleasure, man. I like being a regular. It's a good feeling for this sort of thing.
I believe you are now the third member of the Four Timers Club. It is you, Mike Schubert, and New York Times bestselling author Jeff Perlman.
I'll take it. To be in any kind of company with Perlman and what I know of Schubert, he's a swell guy too.
Both great guys. Yeah.
To be in that company, I'll take it and run with it. That's fun. That's a fun thing to think about.
Well, Darren, you've got one of my favorite baseball interview series, Covering the Bases. It's fantastic. But tell me about your new project that drops this week.
Yeah. So this week we are debuting the Tubby Smith Show. In addition to my work with USA Baseball, I'm also the play-by-play voice for High Point University men's basketball, and Tubby Smith is their head coach, which is funny because, you know, you talk to casual college basketball fans and they might not realize that. And they say, you know, that Tubby Smith? I'm like, yes, the Tubby Smith that won a national championship in 1998 with the Kentucky Wildcats. High Point University in High Point, North Carolina is actually Tubby's alma mater. He played there way back in the late 60s, as a matter of fact. So a couple of years ago, he came back home. He and his wife, Donna, are back in High Point, North Carolina, which is where they met. Actually, Donna was a cheerleader at High Point. It's an adorable story. Tubby wants to do this podcast where basically we call up his coaching friends and talk about coaching. And this was an idea even pre-COVID, and it's turned into this really cool series of interviews, I think, that people will enjoy, because for the most part, and Tubby's creeping up on 70 years old. He's never experienced an off season like this off season was, and neither of his coaching colleagues. So it's turned into some really insightful stuff. We're releasing the pilot on Friday. That's just going to be me and him sort of catching up. I'm talking to him about what's been going on at High Point, how they've dealt with things. And then, you know, we start to get the big school, small school comparisons. Roy Williams is going to be a guest for one of these. Rick Barnes is one of our first interviews, and he and Tubby go way back because they played against each other in what was called at that time the Conference Carolinas. Barnes played at Lenoir Ryan in North Carolina, and they're like friends. You know, it's there's a difference between just being coaching buddies and being friends. These guys go way back, and it was a lot of fun. Some other stuff too. You know, Dave Odom used to coach Wake Forest men's basketball, and he actually now runs the Maui Invitational.
Oh, that's a nice gig.
Yeah, no, it's a great gig for Dave. And you know, we talked to him because he had to move an entire tournament. You know, that's not being played in Maui this year. They moved it to Asheville, North Carolina. So a really cool conversation that's going to come out with him, just being about the logistics of it all, not to mention the old coaching stuff as well that they catch up on. So the Tubby Smith Show, it's going to be wherever you get your podcasts, with legendary men's basketball coach of High Point University, Tubby Smith, and me, and occasionally dropping in with a question or two. I'm telling, dude, Kyle, easiest money I've ever made in my life doing this podcast.
Because we love easy money.
We love easy money because it's just me sitting with Tubby. We get another coach on the phone. I bring it in, right? It's, oh, hey, it's Tubby Smith Show. Get us started. What's like one question? You'll roll it out there, and then they're going to pick it up and go. And who am I to interrupt the likes of Tubby Smith, Roy Williams, and others, right?
Well, Darren, you're going to have to earn the $0 you're making for today's pod. A little more. I'm going to need a little more out of you.
No, I'm ready. I'm knuckles cracking, and we're good. Yeah.
Today we're going to do a fun one. We're going to talk about our three best sports movie villains. There's a lot of sports movie villains out there. Making this list was a lot more difficult than I thought when I texted you about doing this. And from us talking before we started recording, I think you and I went about our list a little bit differently. How did you, without revealing who you picked, how did you go about, like, what did you put into value of what makes a good sports movie villain for you?
Yeah, it's truly, I had I mean, obviously the big board that you start with is massive for this. So you have to create some kind of criteria. You know me as a guy who likes old school literature. So sometimes when analyzing film, I kind of think in those terms. So, you know, you take into account the true quality of the conflict in a plot line and that sort of thing. And then I think just like general wickedness and evilness has to play a big role.
You need that. You need that in a villain. I went with entertainment factor, and I pulled
it
from my big board because I we're gonna go over some honorable mentions. Like I picked, you know, I had you know, I have some intimidating ones. They're your classic, you know, menacing villains, but like I just went with like who do I love to see on screen? Who possibly steals the movie? That was big for me because I think I picked three that you could argue steal the movie or at least steal every scene they're in. So I want from you first, who are your honorable mentions? Who did you, do you want to shout out but did not get a ranking?
Yeah, and this one I almost feel bad for if my number one was not another Rocky villain, but Ivan Drago is only an honorable mention for
an
me.
An iconic villain.
Iconic villain. Says very little, right? Sort of has mouthpieces built in around him to where he doesn't need to say much, which is, you know, classic. We see it like in professional wrestling, for instance. I mean, Kane, everybody remembers Kane, and he was a great villain of a wrestler, a great heel, and he never had to talk. You know, if you go back even more old school, George the Animal Steele's kind of just like the big oaf, and Jimmy Hart did the talking for him in most cases in the good storylines. So that's what makes Drago good, was the economy with which he was used or his dialogue was used, I think. I told you I like to get a little analytical with these. I've got the Beast from The Sandlot in my honorable mentions.
Ooh, because a heel turn at the end as well when he's not actually the villain.
Yeah, so and really it's just about what he represents throughout the entirety of the movie up until that point, which is just the unknown to this group of kids who are scared, understandably, of what they're uncertain of. So I had the Beast from The Sandlot, and then the only like humorous one that I had in my honorable mentions or my top three, I think, although there's some humor tucked in nicely into these roles, White Goodman from Dodgeball, basically because he's Tony Perkis and Heavyweights isn't a sports movie to qualify.
we'll get into White Goodman in a little bit. Wink, okay. Wink. I listed a lot of honorable mentions. There's a lot of ones I want to shout out and just different kinds of villains. First and foremost, Ray the Racist from Remember the Titans.
Ooh.
Refuses to hear an audible, gets Rev hurt. He doesn't stand out enough in that movie to be worth ranking, but you have to shout out Ray the Racist. This is a sneaky one. The entire Kinsella family, the main family that is Ray and Annie, just basically Ray and Annie from Field of Dreams for making Mark the brother feel bad for not being able to see the ghost. The Kinsellas are low key like dickheads. This is one of my favorite takes I've developed doing this podcast.
I talk in the context of sort of like traditional baseball opinions a lot, just given my role with USA Baseball. And one of them that I defy frequently is that Field of Dreams is like this greatest baseball movie ever. I think people overhype it. And I'm not saying necessarily that that's one of the reasons, but it's fine. It's fine.
And see, I still like Field of Dreams, but especially when I did the rewatch for the episode that I did on it, I was just like, man, like Mark thinks his brother-in-law is going like crazy. I feel for him. Like he's just trying to have them not be foreclosed on, not have his sister go live on the streets. Like I respect.
Right, he's the one being practical.
I have another one, and you're going to know exactly where I'm coming from when I list this. Ken Griffey Jr. from Little Big League.
maybe the only time he was ever successfully pinned as the villain.
Absolutely.
I'm trying to think. Absolutely. Yeah, because he was the opposition at the end of Summer Catch, which you know is a movie that I will just stand until the day I die.
I know it.
As awful as it is. He was the opposition when Ryan Dudd makes his major league debut, but he wasn't, you know, it was the welcome to the big leagues moment. It's like, hey, I'm here to help ultimately. So no, not the villain in that case, but yeah, Little Big League, the only time in his life probably that Griff was ever a villain.
Of course, except for like bad Reds fans who are mad that he was on the DL. He was probably a villain. A couple more. Bob Sugar from Jerry Maguire, but also Jerry Maguire, who's like low-key kind of a bad person, should not have gotten in that relationship. Ernie McCracken from Kingpin, an all-time Bill Murray, probably on Murray's Mount Rushmore, in my opinion.
Man, I almost feel bad that I didn't even consider that. Wow, that's a good one.
So good. The Soviet Union hockey team from Miracle. Just the intimidation factor. They are very Drago-like.
Yeah, no, it's because it's almost, I mean, that was the intent of Rocky IV, right? Was to be the same dynamic, because it's the cheating Russians versus America in that case. So I like that. That's good.
Another Cold War thing. Count Adhemar from A Knight's Tale. Which is definitely a sports movie. We cover that.
Right around the time you did the episode for that, I did a rewatch for the first time in a really, really long time. And I had forgotten how much I enjoyed that movie.
It's still really good. And it's on Netflix right now. Everyone, if you have not seen it yet, go watch it. Then go listen to the episode. I have two more. Darren, have you seen Warrior? The Gavin O'Connor MMA movie, Tom Hardy, Joel Edgerton, Nick Nolte?
I don't think so. What's the MMA movie that I have seen that was like, you know, mid-2000s? I was in high school. It's not that one. That's my point. It's not that. Never Back
Down.
Are
you thinking Never Back
Down?
Yeah.
Never
Back Down. It's like the teen. So Warrior is fantastic. And when we finish this recording, I'm going to tell you, you need to go watch. You would, okay. You would love Warrior. I've spoke the praises of War. I covered it a couple months back with a Dan Stupp, formerly with The Athletic. It is an excellent movie, but Koba, who is a fighter from the USSR, or fighter from Russia at that point. He played
Bringing
by
it Kurt, back. Yeah, played, US versus Russia, bringing it back.
Played by Kurt Angle, very intimidating. It's just an excellent movie. I just want to
Kurt
shout
Angle,
out.
Okay.
Yeah.
How was he, as a, not to make this the second episode for Warrior, but how was Kurt Angle?
They didn't ask a lot. They asked him to be, it was a physical role. They didn't ask a whole lot from him. And since the character was Russian, Kurt Angle, famously American Olympian, I don't believe he spoke actually in the movie, but from an intimidation factor, it is a very good physical performance.
All right.
The final one I have is Ross the Boss Ray from Goon, played by Liv Schreiber.
Yeah. I think, I don't put this movie way up there, especially in terms of, like, even in terms of hockey movies. But that's a good role for this list. 100%.
Oh, I love Goon.
I do, but I don't know that it's a. I don't know that it's a classic. Like, even with hockey movies, I would put All the Mighty Ducks ahead of it. I would put Slapshot ahead of it. I mean, it's just not. It wasn't an instant. I mean, it's more recent, of course, but it's Miracle, of course, is better as a hockey movie. I like it. I don't instantly think of it as a classic. So it doesn't necessarily come up immediately when you start having these conversations, which is all to say it's a good pick.
I would put Miracle definitely above it just in terms of enjoyment. I would put Slapshot probably ahead of it. And then Mighty Ducks has the youth nostalgia pull, but I think I would rather watch Goon at this point.
Okay. No, that's fair. That's fair.
Schreiber, incredible performance. I've been on a big Schreiber kick lately between this and his performance in Spotlight. Like, he's just makes me like feel like I need to start watching Ray Donovan. But Darren, let's take a quick ad break and then let's get back with our top threes. Big Screen Sports is brought to you by Indeed. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, and you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job posts, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try out Indeed with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is our best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st. Big Screen Sports is also brought to you by our old friends at BetOnline.ag. The wait is over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win the season. Game spreads, totals, team player, and coaching props. BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can also get in on season opening bonuses today. Start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. And that stuff changes week to week, so that's always open. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at BetOnline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right, we're back. It's time to get into our top three list. Darren, I want to start with your number three. What is your number three top favorite sports movie villain?
All right, this is the analytical brain at work, as I alluded to. I've got Jake LaMotta from Raging Bull.
You're going super prestige with this. I believe this will be the only pick on our list where the role netted the actor a Best Actor Oscar.
Yeah, well, which wasn't even intentional, but I mean, you know, it's the Scorsese flick, Jake LaMotta, his 1970 memoir, and I love this movie, and no one's ever done a boxing movie like it since, from even from the perspective of just like the way they shot it and it being based on, like, the video shoot being based on what you see when you see old school boxing photos with, like, the photographers ringside with their huge contraptions. They've got the flash separately with it, which are, you know, some of those have gone down as, like, the most historic photos in sports history. So I love the movie overall, but De Niro as Jake LaMotta as like the protagonist, but also his own worst enemy. And it's incredibly poetic because what makes him a great boxer is all of the things that make him fall short as a human being, right? And I just think it's beautifully done, And that's my one. I wanted to get poetic with one pick, so that's my one. And I've got Jake LaMotta of Raging Bull at number three.
Well, it's very much the classic Scorsese main character. Because, I mean, you could say the same kind of thing, Henry Hill in Goodfellas. Like, you are following his story. You're rooting for Henry Hill, for the even though you really shouldn't, because Henry Hill is a scumbag. But you're still, like, you still, you know, and it's the same thing. So, yeah, it's a fantastic performance. I mean, it is without a doubt the heaviest performance on either of our two lists. But I mean, you're right in that there has not been a boxing movie. And again, I'm going to say, like, you should watch Warrior, because there's a little bit of the gruffness of Jake LaMotta in one of the characters in Warrior. He does not have Jake LaMotta's misdeeds, I guess.
Okay.
Definitely a better person, we'll just straight up say it. But a lot of that kind of role, a great Hardy performance, Tom Hardy. But yeah, I mean, I can't argue with this one. And I want to flip it to my number three, because it couldn't be anything any less like Raging Bull. It is a man that you have previously mentioned in your honorable mentions. It is White Goodman. Probably my favorite Stiller performance, more than Zoolander, more than Tenenbaums. I don't know. I know you like Tony Perkis. Is that your favorite Stiller?
Because I think White Goodman was just that later. So I recently watched Hubie Halloween, and Stiller is in it at the very beginning, but he's basically the assisted living attendant from Happy Gilmore, right?
And it's that's really good Stiller too.
Yeah, which is also really good Stiller, but it was watered down, right? And not that White Goodman, I don't know that watered down could ever describe White Goodman, but I think really for Dodgeball, they just told Stiller, hey, you remember that Tony Perkis character that you did? Like, do that, but less, like, not as dark and more humorous.
I got kind of into this in the Dodgeball episode did with Tim Miller a couple months back. Tim Miller, notably, is a political writer, was a GOP political operative. But we said that White Goodman has gives off a lot of Donald Trump Jr. vibes.
Oh, God. I'm horrified at how accurate that is.
He is insufferable, but kind of in the theme of my list, White Goodman, Stiller in this movie, I think, wins every scene he is. And that is in part because when he and Vaughn share the screen in this movie, Peter LaFleur is just a much more low-key character. It is not, he doesn't have any of the Vaughn zaniness that you see in Old Schooler that you and I talked about in Swingers. So Stiller is getting to chew up that scenery and win those scenes.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. It is by design, but I do like, I mean, I put him on my honorable mentions for a reason. I do like White Goodman, and I find myself quoting White Goodman an awful lot just in everyday life. It's the quotability of that movie is, I think, greater than you even remember if you take a few years in between watches. If you haven't seen it recently, like, go back and ask yourself, like, how many of these things do I just say on a regular basis? For instance, I'll just give one. There's the White Goodman line, and it's a throwaway. It is not at all one of the ones. It's not, you know, fucking Chuck Norris or nobody makes me bleed my own blood or anything like that. But he walks into the concessions person or the vendor at the event and slaps the cup. The Pepsi cup, I think it is, from the bottom out of their hand, and it goes, "What the hell?" And I find myself saying it in the key of White Goodman, "What the hell?" all the time.
I was going to say that was one of his more villainous moments too, because that's probably like a $7 Pepsi at a sporting event. I mean, he also gets someone fired from their job, which is horrendous. He is a generally terrible person. I think my favorite Goodman line is from the the opening of the movie, that commercial, and it's the thing, like, we know that, like, ugliness and fatness are genetic traits, much like baldness or necrophilia, which gets me every single time.
Here at Globo Gym, we understand that ugliness and fatness are genetic disorders, much like baldness or necrophilia. And it's only your fault if you don't hate yourself enough to do something about it.
So you went with a best actor with an Oscar winner for your number three. I went with White Goodman.
White Goodman.
Darren, take us to your number two.
W-H-I-T.
E. E. I like to break a mental sweat, too.
All right, sorry. Did you ask for my number two?
Your number two.
Yeah, okay. This is maybe the most horrible, horrible person of all in any sports movie ever. And it's just, it's apt because of the couple of episodes you and I have done previously of this fine podcast of yours. I've got Rachel Phelps from Major League.
A terrible human.
Horrible human. And, I mean, obviously, just demeaning and entitled and just with the worst intentions immediately, right? She buys the baseball team in Cleveland.
Or she inherits the baseball team.
Yeah, she inherits that
old dead husband.
Even worse, right? Inherits it and wants to move it, inconsiderate of, you know, current players. As we've talked about on a podcast specific to Major League, like, she ends up inviting all of these no-name has-beens to spring training. Well, like, what the hell happened to the entire team that was on the roster before then? Assumedly, she just cut all of them. And so that's the start of it, is she just cuts literally an entire baseball team to invite some no-namers. And it only gets worse from there. She's the worst.
She's the worst. And the thing is, if she would have succeeded with her plan, she would have headed down to Miami. The city of Miami apparently made a generous offer, which we all know now would have been a gigantic eyesore stadium that is screwing the taxpayers.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And with a construction out in center field that made it look like an amusement park, something, you know, akin to a Price is Right game out there in the outfield that eventually would get torn down.
I was about to say, I cannot remember, were you pro or anti Marlins home run statue?
I largely indifferent, just because I think you sort of, it got to a point where you just sort of assumed failure for them. Like, it was fine. It's quirky, and it probably works if they do well as a team and end up winning. Right. I think there's a lot that goes into that stuff that is, you know, success is sort of built in, but they had become such a joke that there's no way that thing was going to recover.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But yeah, that's a good pick for your number two. My number two, the first of two in back-to-back golf villains, is David Sims, played by Don Johnson, who now at this point is just getting known as Dakota Johnson's father.
Yeah.
But the classic, and we kind of talked about this before we started recording, just about some professional golfers in general, and just especially in the 90s, the classic smarmy golfer. And he does the ultimate pro athlete sin of refusing to sign an autograph for a kid right after he lights up his cig after his post-round interview and then gets in the ass of those grandparents who wanted an autograph for their kid.
Excuse me, Mr. Sims. Excuse me. Would you mind giving our grandson an autograph?
Can you people not see that I'm busy? I'm working here. This is my office. Do I come to your office and ask you for your autograph? I don't think so. Jesus, what an ugly dog.
Just, and one of the other bad things about David Sims is on the golf course, he's not a killer. So he's so talented, but like, he was the one who should have gone for the green on the last hole because he was down a stroke. He had to birdie. Roy McIlvoy only had a par to go into a playoff. And like everyone who's listened to this podcast knows how I feel about Roy McIlvoy's decision to not grow as a human being at all and learn from anything, and his shitty ass girlfriend therapist It just, anyways, David Sims needed to go for it, and he's not. He's not a killer. He's an absolute coward. I would have, he's the guy you just do not root for. Like, you just don't want him to win. I should have thought of a comparison, a present day comparison. I don't really have one. There's not really a lot of golfers that I don't root for. Like, even like Bryson is entertaining.
Is all right. So Bryson DeChambeau is my guy, not to get on a tangent. And he was long before he beefed up, because I just like his approach and think I'm always intrigued by people who are trying to do things more logically than they have been done before. So I'm pro Bryson. Is he Patrick Reed?
Oh, okay. That's it. Okay. You've got it. That was perfect. That's the name I was looking for. Yeah. David Sims is Patrick Reed. I think that sums him up. He's Patrick Reed.
I like the pick because of how real it is, right? When you say smarmy pro golfer, I think people who know golf somewhat well, they just know. You just know, okay, that's the type of person I'm getting here. So I like that pick a lot.
And David Sims is a guy who you could see having come on the scene like with a great Ryder Cup performance, kind of like Patrick Reed did, and then we get a couple years of exposure to him and we're just like, oh no, this guy ain't
not
it.
Him again.
this guy ain't it. Darren, take us to your number one. Who's your number one sports movie villain?
All right, this one I think was pretty easy. I alluded to having another Rocky villain as my number one, and it's Clubber Lang, as portrayed by Mr. T in Rocky III.
The little man don't want to come to me. Then I'll come to you people and lay out the truth. I am ranked number one. One! That means I'm the best. But this bum been taking the easy matches, fighting other bums. I'm telling you and everybody here, I'll fight him anywhere, anytime, for nothing. But you people ain't never gonna see that happen, because he's gonna retire. You see, he don't fight no real man. He fight themselves.
What? You're a disgrace to this sport.
Shut up, old man. You and that chump don't know where I had to come from.
Just the jerkiest of all jerks to ever grace the silver screen. I mean, he made it
menacing.
He makes a pass at Adrian, right? Gives Mickey a heart attack, and he's like screaming at an unconscious or close to it Rocky after just beating the shit out of him at one point. And he just runs his mouth the whole time, and you enjoy it. I think he fits both. He's a truly evil person, but for entertainment's sake, He just took over every scene that he was in, despite it being Stallone's franchise. I mean, Clubber Lang dominated this film.
He did. He is the number one Rocky villain that you're really geared up for Rocky to beat the shit out of him. Like, Drago is a different kind of, and I mean, you know, did a lot of unpacking on this the past month doing Rocktober on this podcast.
For sure.
But Drago is more of like this immovable force, and very much the metaphor of U.S. versus the Soviet Union and the Cold War.
He's a big metaphor. Yeah.
Yeah. And he is more it's like a tall mountain to climb. Like, oh, you know, and same with Apollo Creed, in the sense of it is just going to be difficult. You're rooting for Rocky, but it's, you know, it's going to be a tough battle. Clubber Lang, you're just like, Rocky, kill this motherfucker. And it's just great. Like, and the funny thing is, Mr. T is also so likable. Like, when you watch the like old A-Team episodes and stuff, and just like, you know, all the Pity the Fool stuff that became an endearing thing. And it's funny to think that like he burst on because of this.
Yeah, no, right? He's like a pop culture sensation for everything opposite of this, sort of. I mean, I guess there's just like a general, I don't want to say it's unpleasantness to his demeanor, because it's what makes you like him. He just sort of parlayed being the bad guy to being like sarcastically loud and aggressive. And that's what makes him likable. Is that making sense?
Yeah. The thing is, he does Rocky III, and then he gets the A-Team and suddenly becomes a good guy right away. It's a really interesting heel turn because you could have seen him, like, he could have been pegged as just a villain for the rest of the 80s, and instead he's the, you know, the likable B.A. Baracus on the A-Team.
Man, that's a great, like, if you want to do a what-if episode, I don't know who you from Hollywood that you can hunt down from that time period, but, like, what made you see Mr. T as Clubber Lang and think, yeah, we're gonna turn him into a good guy, right? Because you're right, he could have been like that villain in every movie, sports or otherwise, for a decade.
It's pretty amazing that's how often you look in his IMDb, how often he is Mr. T. Like, that's how often he just plays himself. great stuff. I want to wrap with my number one. You know, I alluded to having two golf villains. Someone who is legit, like, just the best. I couldn't think of anyone better. Someone who dominates the movie, owns every scene he's in. It is obviously the one and only Shooter McGavin, played by Christopher McDonald. A career-defining performance. People see Christopher McDonald and they're like, oh, that's Shooter McGavin.
Oh, it's a career-dominating performance, right? Like, it's the only thing anyone ever knows him for. Like, if you see him in an airport, how many Americans are immediately yelling, oh, Shooter McGavin, right? Like, I mean, that's, yeah, 100%. And the only reason I couldn't, so I agree, and I think he's a fine, if not perfect, number one pick. The only reason I couldn't get behind it is just the true evil factor, right? Like, he's not wicked necessarily. He's not evil. He's just kind of an idiot who happens to be the opposition. And he's really, really good at being the idiot. I think the character's intent, not the movie's intent, is for him to be the wicked, evil type that would land him on my number one. But he falls short of that. And it's for sake of comedy.
He's a classy buffoon.
Yeah. Like, that's a good way to put it.
But the character is just so quotable. Like, a lot of the quotes from Happy Gilmore, I was thinking about this when I was kind of typing stuff up. He's going against peak Sandler. Like, Sandler's never been better than the Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore, you know, Big Daddy, that
100%. I mentioned Hubie Halloween was severely underwhelmed. So.
I was gonna ask you, but like, and you know, obviously, like, I am, you know, Sandler and Uncut Gems was astounding, but this is Sandler's like comedic peak, and Christopher McDonald in every scene, he is he's what you remember from almost all those scenes. He steals pretty much every scene that he and Sandler share. You can argue that it is Christopher McDonald's movie.
That was quite a show you put on today, Gilmore. You were the talk of the tournament.
Wow, thanks a lot.
Yeah, well, you really crushed that ball off the tee, I'll tell you what. You know, you'd be something in one of those long drive contests. Yeah, you could probably make a very good living traveling around, hustling at driving ranges. Thanks, Phil.
That's, you know, I know what you're doing right now, and I don't like it. So why don't you just shut your trap before I put my foot in it?
Don't turn your back on me. Let's get one thing straight. This is Shooter's turn. I've worked hard my whole life, paid my dues, and now it's Shooter's turn. And Shooter's not about to let his reign at the top be spoiled by some freak sideshow clown.
You could. And even, like, you could make the argument that the scene absent him, or absent of him, that is the best, next best, is Bob Barker's. Like, you don't even get to a Sandler scene until you're, you know, maybe 10th best scene of the movie.
You know, you could also argue that the Jackass guy, you could put him on an honorable mention list for sports movie villains. Like, he definitely gets his worth. But Shooter McGavin, just all the, you know, he's the most quotable part of this movie. He is, I mean, it's a parody of David Sims when you really think about it.
It is. They're like, he's a comedic version of the Dave Sims, Patrick Reed prototype.
Yeah, I am. God, it makes me just want to watch Happy Gilmore. But
I will say, you mentioned that you were going to have a couple of golf villains. I'm not surprised and not to hear this, but for whatever reason, my mind went to Judge Smales from Caddyshack.
I thought about Judge Smales, but like, so the thing was like, Smales sucks. Like he's right. just, I mean, he's just a bummer of a dude, but he's in such, when I think of Caddyshack, I don't think of Smales as much as I think of Bill Murray and Chevy Chase and Rodney Dangerfield.
I think that's a good defense.
He's
of
like
not having him there.
He's clear fourth billing for me in that movie versus it's when I think of all three of these movies, when I think of Dodgeball and Tin Cup and Happy Gilmore, I think of those guys first or second every time.
And I think maybe it's the way those were written, because Happy Gilmore is clearly set up to be Happy versus Shooter. Dodgeball is clearly set up to be Goodman versus LaFleur, or vice versa, as LaFleur is the good guy, right? And Tin Cup, very clearly, McAvoy versus Sims. At least it ultimately gets to that point, right? And they've got their battles internally along the way. Whereas Caddyshack, it's a little bit more of a sort of a potpourri with character-wise. And Smales sucks, but you're right. He's not even one of the first two or three people I think of.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Darren, I think we put together a good list. Might have to throw out something on the social media, let the listeners decide.
I like it. I will say, as we were doing this, I thought of one more that I probably would have as an honorable mention.
Oh, yeah. Hit me with it.
The Monstars from Space Jam.
Fuck. Yeah, that's a good one.
I don't know how I didn't think of them before, but as we were, I don't even know what would have made that register in my mind. But as we were talking through it, I was like, oh, they got to be on my list. So if unofficially, at least, we're going to add the Monstars to my honorable mention.
Technically, Charles Barkley, sports movie villain. Charles Barkley's talent.
Yeah, sports Charles Barkley's villain. Talent.
Darren, this was a blast, as always. Tell the folks again where they can find you and where they can check out the Tubby Smith Show.
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter, at Darren Vaught. I'm at the same handle on Instagram, but I'm bad at Instagram, so Twitter's probably best. The Tubby Smith Show, debuting this week. We're releasing the pilot episode on Friday. Is going to be on all platforms that you get your podcasts. If you see one, or if you use one that you don't see it on, just reach out at Darren Vaught again, harass me, and we'll make sure we get it there. Should be a lot of fun. Legendary college basketball coach, Tubby Smith, just going to be chopping it up with other coaches, and I'm going to be there to get a word in here and there. I'm looking forward to seeing what people think about it. And then for covering the bases for USA Baseball, we've got a new episode coming out this week. Kansas City Royals top prospect Bobby Witt Jr. is going to be on.
Well, I'm definitely going to be tuning into that. Darren, I've said before, I love covering the bases. You do a great job. I'm looking forward to the Tubby Smith Show. I'm looking forward to hearing your easy money. Very, very jealous about that. Appreciate you coming on this show. If you enjoyed this episode of Big Screen Sports, please remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcast, rate, review. You guys know the drill. A fun bonus episode coming at you later this week, but regardless, episodes of Big Screen Sports drop every Monday. So we'll catch you then. Thanks for listening.